All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Oilers Nation Radio, presented by the Nation Network. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Welcome to Oilers Nation Radio, episode 112. I'm Bag Milk here with Rick, Tyler Remchuk, and Nation Dan. We are here to break down the world of sports and specifically the Edmonton Oilers. As we always do, we start off the podcast with our Sherwood Ford Giant Question of the Week. But first, I want to tell you about the winterization program out at Sherwood Ford. You need new tires, you need an oil change, you need a service, you need a new whip in general. Sherwood Park is the place to be. Head on out, see our friends at Sherwood Ford, and maybe, just maybe, Gus, the ambassador of smiles, will be there. But make an appointment, he's got things to do. Tyler, please take it away with our Sherwood Ford Giant Question of the Week.
This one was talked about a little bit around Twitter and such this week, but I think it's a great question, and it's a fantastic Sherwood Ford Giant Question of the Week. I don't think goals are going to be hard to come by on this Oilers team next season, but how many 20-goal scorers do you think the Oilers will have? That's the big question.
Okay, so I've got a question first.
Yeah.
Are we assuming, like, is this prorated over an 82-game season?
Yeah, we'll do prorated over an 82-game season. So if they play, whatever, 60 games, they only need to score, whatever that'd be, like 14 or 15. You know, but in a normal 82-game season, how many 20-goal scorers would the Oilers have?
For the people that are playing at home, last year we had three officially in Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Oh, but, of course, James Neal was at 19, and he was prorated to 20 because the league is a joke and all that. And Cassian was sitting at 15 with 59 games played. So he had another 20 games to get 5 goals. You got to think he would probably be there. And then the next highest was Josh Archibald at 12. So he probably wasn't going to hit that.
So in theory, it could have been 5 last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we're guessing, unless you're the NHL, because they'll just award the Calgary Flames draft picks anyway. Gentlemen, who wants to start on this one? This is a tough one.
I can hop in. Oh, Dan, you go first.
No, I'll go first. Tyler, back off. It's okay. My try.
Yep.
All right. So I have Cahoon scoring 27 goals next year. So he's there for sure. You got to think Draisaitl is going to be good for at least 60 this year. McDavid, I'm going to say he'll push 20 for sure. I don't know if Nuge will get there this year. Yeah, he'll get there. Yeah. So I'm going to say a safe 5.
Okay.
Six.
Holy.
So who's your list, real quick?
So I think Draisaitl, Connor, Nuge, Cahoon, Ennis, and Cassian.
Wow.
Okay. Okay.
I think six is a little ambitious.
I like ambition.
Four is probably
Hope will never die, Tyler.
Four is probably the safe one because I think you can look at Nuge, McDavid, Draisaitl, and one of their running mate is going to get 20 as well. But I'll go one less than you, Dan. I'll say five. I think it'll be obviously McDavid, Nuge, Draisaitl. I think Kyler Yamamoto is going to score 20 next season, playing a full season in that top six. And then I'll go ahead and I'll leave my last one as kind of a wild card. It could be Cahoon. Maybe it's Neil if he's playing a ton on the power play again. Maybe if it's even someone like Jesse Puljujarvi. But I think the locks are Draisaitl, Yamamoto, McDavid, and Nuge, and there'll be one wild card mixed in there.
Don't forget Ennis. So 4.5 is the line? Is that what we're saying?
I think 4.5 would be the line if I had to set it, and I would take the over with 5.
Okay. Rick, what are you thinking?
Well, I'll take the over there. And just quickly run them off. It's going to be Connor, Leon, Nuge for 3. I do like Yamamoto getting in there. That's 4. I can see Cahoon just kind of riding shotgun there. That's 5. And so I am going to go with 6 because I'm going to throw on Puljujärvi here only for one reason though, because I think if you just look at the player itself, I think that's the guy you want on your power play. I think that's the guy you want down in the Letestu spot, in the Chiasson spot. Just because he shoots right, I have him ahead of Neil. He's got that big body. I know I last year I said I'd like to see Yam there, but everyone's like, no, you got to be big body. So let's put Yessa down there. So I think he's going to put him up. So let's go with 6.
I'm looking at the Oilers roster right now, and I would love 6, but I've been hurt before. So I'm going to be pessimistic. I guess I'm going to be the low bar on this one and just say 4. I've got Connor, Nuge, Leon. Those are locks. And then I'm going to put in James Neal.
So we're not saying no one's throwing in a defenseman here.
Nah.
No Barry, no Bear, no nothing.
I don't think Barry's.
I'm looking at Barry. 20. Barry's career high is 14.
Barry's going to have right now, so. Barry's going to have assists galore. Yeah. But I don't see him as a goal scorer.
Well, he's going to have to shoot, right? Because when Connor's got the puck on the right wall there, they're kind of, people are going to like slide over to Connor. They're going to be watching Leon. If they expect Barry to kind of play the top and move it from side to side like Klefbom does, they'll be looking at that pass, which is going to open up the shot. So I think he's going to get some goal. I could see him getting a career high, but I don't see him getting 20.
So the best, just for the purposes of the conversation, Tyson Barry, his best, like, goals per game
14
came in 2017-18 with the Avalanche when he had 14 in 68 games, finished with 57 points. But you know what? If he gets anywhere near that clip for the Oilers, I'll be very happy about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of Barry's shots are wrist shots that you can then redirect, or they come off of a rebound and then you're putting that in the net kind of play instead of, he's not firing a Klefbom or an Evan Bouchard shot kind of thing.
A Bouchbom.
I actually want to talk about Bouchard a little bit later because he and both Raphael Lavoie having an excellent start to their season in the hockey Allsvenskan.
Low tide taught me how to say that one.
But one more time, Tyler.
Allsvenskan.
I like that. I like when you're Swedish, Tyler. If you have guesses to this, if you're listening to the podcast right now and you want to jump in on the Sherwood Ford Giant question, I want to know how many 20-goal scorers the Edmonton Oilers could have on their roster for the 2021 season. And as we said, use a full year as kind of your measure. Obviously, we're not going to get a full 82-game season, but that doesn't matter. It's November, and we're having a silly conversation on the podcast. So, you know, fuck off. Looking at the defense, though, I don't think anybody thinks that there's going to be a 20-goal defenseman on the Oilers. No. Who will be the highest scoring defenseman? Is it default that it's Tyson Barry?
Yes.
He's going to be playing a little bit default minutes.
He's going to get some 5-on-5, too, though.
Yeah. I imagine him sending great passes to McDavid or Draisaitl off the rush. Like, I'm getting excited for the amount of 2-on-1s Tyson Barry could spring with this Oilers forward group.
Well, I'm really looking forward to... Because Connor's really good at picking spots to flee the zone early. Yeah. And I think, is that what you're kind of talking about? Because that's what I picture, is Tyson Barry kind of behind the net, maybe walking up the wall a little bit and then bombing a pass down to Connor.
He's going to bomb it to like an open area, and Connor's going to know where to, like, we're going to look like a quarterback and a wide receiver, where a quarterback throws to a spot even before the wide receiver is cut to that area, just because he knows that's where he's going. It's going to be really fun to watch those guys.
Just even a scenario where, like you said, Begnaud buries behind the net. He takes a couple of steps over to his strong side, and McDavid just times it perfectly where they connect and the defense is flat-footed, and he's got a breakaway from the center line in kind of thing.
I'm going to stick with the defense for a second here, boys, because this week, early in the week, Ken Holland did an interview where he says that he's expecting to go the full season without Oscar Klefbom. Sucks, no doubt. When you're looking at the defense with Klefbom out, obviously Tyson Barry is going to play a big part in filling that hole, but who do you think has to make the biggest step forward to kind of bridge the gap in this year without the Oilers? Because, I mean, we're talking about a guy who played the most minutes. He played in all three situations. And I'm curious who you guys think has to take the biggest step forward to ensure that the Oilers don't look like they did when Pistol Pete didn't feel like Andre Sequeira was irreplaceable.
I think a lot of people look at Barry as sort of the direct replacement for Klefbom, and he does need to be good at 5-on-5 for the Oilers, but the right side of their blue line is pretty solid. Like, Barry won't have to, depending on what pairing he has, but he won't have to eat a lot of heavy 5-on-5 minutes because Bear can do that and Larson can do that. And there's pressure on this guy. It's Caleb Jones. This is a guy who took some strides forward last year, I think can be a competent top six defenseman, but the Oilers are probably going to need him to be a little bit more than that this year. So I'll go ahead and say that there's pressure on Caleb Jones to really take another significant step forward this season.
It's going to be everybody down the left side, because I don't think one guy can come up and take all the minutes. I think it's going to get divvied up between all three of them. So, yeah, I mean, Nurse is going to have to, like, fasten his game in. Jones is going to have to take a step up. And we're going to need to see the Russell we saw in the playoffs.
Dan, who do you think? Which defenseman do you think is going to need to take the biggest step forward to make this work?
Yeah, well, I think that Tyler and Rick are both right. I think that the reality is that each and every one of our defensemen on the left-hand side is going to have to take a giant step forward, in the sense that you're covering up for 25 minutes of a
not even a giant, player, but they all have to take a decent step. Nothing.
Well,
too
it's
crazy.
A giant step in the sense that Darnell Nurse is now going to be playing 25 minutes a game, and then you look down the list to Chris Russell is going to be playing 16-17 minutes a game again. Like, it's just it's not the ideal situation you wanted to be in, but you're going to have to do it by committee, and I expect one of Bear or Jones to have a bit of a regression this year. And so I don't think we can necessarily count on all of them. That's why I've been hoping for and pushing for, some more defensive depth to be able to take up that spot. But I think that it's going to be a replacement by committee kind of movement for the entire team on defense.
So looking at who you guys said specifically, Tyler brought up Caleb Jones. Last year in 43 games played, he averaged 14 minutes and 8 seconds per night. And I think it would be safe to say that those numbers will get bumped up this year. The interesting one, Dan brought up Chris Russell. He averaged 16:47 last season. He's going to need to take a step forward this year, because if you look at his fancies, his Corsi 4 was only 43.2%. And if you're a nerd guy that likes the shot metrics, that ain't good. The interesting one for me, and I'm going to agree that it's going to be Darnell Nurse. Last year, he averaged 23:27, and I think that's going to get closer to Klefbom numbers. Now, the big question is that a good thing for Darnell Nurse? Because having him play too much is a bad thing. He seems to be better in that sweet spot of 22 to 23 minutes.
Well, if he plays 22 to 23, that leaves you with 37 minutes. And you divide that, I can take 10, or, you go 15, 16 for Jones, you go 12, 13 for Russell. And then the rest of that's going to be, hopefully anyways, power play time.
Yeah, I always assume that there's going to be 10 minutes of special teams time in a game. Either you're going to be shorthanded for 6, or you're going to be on the power play for 6, and then the reverse for 4 kind of thing. That's usually how penalties are divvied up in today's NHL. So you have 50 minutes to kill on that left side. If Nurse plays half of it at 25, 12 and a half even strength minutes for Russell and Jones, or some equation of that, I think you're not asking too much. So I think you make a good point, Begnaud. There is some pressure on Darnell Nurse. And I mean, he's not in a contract year, but he's getting close to that point. This is a chance for him to prove that, hey, I want $7.5 million on my next deal. Earn it this year.
Well, if this is the time, if he is going to make that kind of smoke on his next contract when this bridge deal is done, now's the time to show that he's worth it, because the Oilers are going to be without their sexiest defenseman. I mean,
He has to be auditioning for Klefbom's job, does he not?
I think so. Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, let's face it. Like, this year is a write-off for Klefbom. That gives him two more years at 4.167. Unknown to what his injury is going to be like this time next year. He may not be what we thought. He may retire. You know, there's so many different options for him. We have no idea. This is Darnell Nurse's chance, and it's going to be a two-year situation of, or maybe a year and a half, I guess, of auditioning for that number one spot.
And I've made the case for this in an article. I've made the case on the podcast. I think there's a real chance the Oilers trade a left-handed defenseman before the expansion draft, whether it's Jones, Nurse, or Klefbom. And if Darnell Nurse doesn't really prove he's a legitimate top pairing guy, he might be the odd man out in that situation, especially considering the fact that he's not too far from unrestricted free agency.
The only thing that scares me is, I can't remember who was on the radio the other day. They came on and said Broberg is like a 4-5-6. He's going to be a good 4-5-6. Now, I took that with a grain of salt, obviously. I wasn't too sure who was talking and what the context, everything was, but they said that whoever it was guaranteeing you he was going to be a bottom level, really good, but, you know, your bottom four type of defenseman.
When it comes to the defensive situation for the upcoming season, which we're going to talk about next, Ken Holland said, I'm planning for 2021 that Oscar is not playing, and anything other than that will be a surprise. A pleasant surprise, no doubt.
Oh, I don't know, man. You're going to have to deal with a salary cap if he pops back at it. That's not going to be a pleasurable thing.
No, that one's scary. I said, yes, we could always use one more defenseman, which touches on Dan's point there, but we're fine right now. We've got Lagesson signed, we're going to get Ethan Bear signed, and we've also got Bouchard. I'm watching how Evan's playing in Europe, and he'll be back for training camp. As for Philip Broberg, he'll be staying with Skellefteå until the Swedish season is over. Our NHL season will go way beyond that, so he can come to Edmonton when the year is done. Makes sense. Again, it's kind of fun listening to Ken Holland speak, as opposed to Pistol Pete, where he just had little choppy sentences that never really went anywhere.
If he
talked
at all.
Nice to get some kind of information without really saying anything at all. Looking at Bouchard over in Sweden, one more time, Tyler.
All Svenskan.
Bouchard, in 17 games played, has 4 goals, 9 assists for 13 points. This is a nice little clip there. And he is leading defensemen in shots on net, which I love to see. I love that this dude's a shooter.
Shooter, shoot.
Especially a big right-handed shot. Like, he's got, like, dad's got some muscle on that.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. I respect it. Raphael Lavoie, he's also having a good year over in Sweden in Allsvenskan. 13 games played. He's got 8 goals and 2 assists for 10 points. Does it matter to you guys, but my question for you on both of these two, does it matter to you that they're doing it in Sweden's second top league, or do you think this is still good experience for them anyway, playing with pros over in Sweden?
Playing against pros, well, playing against men, I think that's important. I think, to me, I value that just as much as I'd value the American League.
Well, and the reason for going to that second league, correct me if I'm wrong, is if they went to the first league, they would be locked into that team until the end of the season. I think that the SHL has protection for that, and so that's why they're down in the second league. But again, like Tyler said, it's men versus, you know, these are kids, and so there's still that edge that you give to the grown men. So the fact that they're doing it is still special.
Rick, what do you think about some success in the second tier league? Just sometimes it's nice to be a bigger fish in a small pond too, no?
Yeah, I mean, they were guaranteed ice time going down there. There wasn't going to be a situation where you're trying to play your veterans or something like that ahead of them. So this is a place where they were going to get guaranteed ice time. So they're getting the ice and they're making the most of it. It's exactly what you want to see happening.
Just like what I want to see happening is all four of us ordering some delicious dinner tonight from skipthedishes.ca. Last night I ordered Skip the Dishes. I was feeling lazy. I got a cheeseburger. It was delightful. I encourage you to do the same. If you can't cook and you're like me, but you need to eat, you need to be fed, and you need sustenance for your temple, I recommend going to skipthedishes.ca. Tip your driver well. They are putting themselves out there for you. Get yourself something to eat. Gentlemen, before we move on to the next segment, I just want to give you guys this. I believe it's a constructive criticism of the podcast. We've got a 1-star review coming in with the title of Boring and Annoying.
Well, I'm definitely the annoying one.
the feedback is you just copy and paste what everyone is saying on the internet, and then you add crappy radio sound effects to it. Again, I can't say that that's wrong.
So specifically,
fuck you say about my buttons.
our hot and cold performers. We're stealing that from people. Like Rick has talked about some stuff. Tyler has ripped on some sports. Like I don't know. Sure, we're boring. Sorry,
Tyler. One more boring and horrible radio sound effect, please.
That's my most. But you know what? I love it.
I'm so angry we don't play the whole song.
Yeah,
I think we need to include more sound effects. That's what this person's asking for. They want it to be exciting with more sound effects that are unique to just us.
Yeah.
So maybe after this show, we should record our own sound effects that we can play over top of our voices.
Well, yeah, we should have our own. This way we can all press buttons at the same time. And yeah. This big, just mess it's of like, noise.
Yeah.
It's like the Hall of Commons. Everybody just yelling at the same time, and then we all stop talking at the same time, and then we all start talking at the same time.
That was perfectly timed.
I just want to give you guys the yin to the yang on that one. This one is a 5-star review. It just says beef and ched. Whenever I tell people that I love Arby's, they usually look at me like I'm some kind of doofus. This podcast regularly reminds me that I'm not alone. A double beef and cheddar with curly fries and a Dr. Pepper is the perfect fast food meal. Support your local Arby's. And
Hold on. You get a double beef and cheddar?
Apparently, yes. A double beef and cheddar with curly fries and a Dr. Pepper is the perfect.
Like, I know they have the half pounder, and I know they had them in sizes. Like, I got this menu down half, boys. Okay. I didn't see a double, but I'm going to look into this.
Let me just say, as a person that came into the office, I hated Arby's to start with. Like, I was one of those haters of Arby's, and I'll fully admit it. I've come around on it, but like, really, at this time in our lives, do we really need to poo-poo on people for liking something? Like, if Bag Milk and this listener and Rick want to shove some, you know, some roast
delicious
cheese, some
meat.
Cheese sauce liquidated with some cheese sauce down their gullets, let them do it in peace. And you know what? If you're listening to this and you think, I can't go out to Arby's today, or I can't order Arby's on Skip the Dishes for fear of my neighbors looking at my Arby's bag and being like, what are those people eating? I say, you know what? You do you. Order from Skip the Dishes.
Rick, this is what I would do. I'm thinking about the double beef and cheddar now. I would order 2 half-pound beef and cheddars on skipthedishes.ca, right? And then what I would do is I would take the top bun off one sandwich.
Yep.
And then I would just stack them like a Big Mac.
Oh, come on. Oh, buddy.
I think I'm on something here, boys.
That thing's going to be massive. Yeah, I'll give it a shot one day.
Absolutely. Skipthedishes.ca. How's that for a plug? Love that one. Incorporating some listener reviews into that one as well.
I'm fairly certain between yourself, me, and Jay Downton, we are the main reason why Arby's is on Skip.
I'm not going to say that we are the reason that Arby's is on Skip, but we have to be a sizable portion of the reason that they are on Skip.
9.4 rating last I looked.
And of course, it's delicious. I want to change gears a little bit. I want to look to Gary Bettman did a presser a little bit earlier in the week about giving us kind of our first look at what the next season may look like. What I want to touch on specifically is where he talked about the hybrid bubble system where teams fly in and out for a little bit and then they go back home for their family. So before we get started, Gary said, you'll play 10 to 12 days. You'll play a bunch of games without traveling. Then you'll go back home, go home for a week, be with your family. We'll have our testing protocols and other things you need. It's not going to be quite as effective as the bubble, but we think we can, if we go this route, minimize the risks to the extent practical and that is practical and sensible. And so that's one thing that we are looking about. It's kind of a little bit like what Major League Baseball did, right, Tyler?
Yeah, kind of what Major League Baseball did. And here's what I'm going to say, though. It's not going to be a situation where you go to Vegas for 12 days and you play the Flames and you play the Sharks and the Kings in Vegas. They're not going to do that. It's not going to work. I don't think there'll be bubbles. I think what's more realistic and what's probably going to end up happening, at least down in the States, is what we saw Pierre LeBrun report, which is you're going to get a situation where, let's say it's Chicago going to Minnesota, and they will play 3 games over the course of 5 days in Minnesota. and they'll play a little three-game series like they would in baseball, and then they'll travel back to Chicago. I don't think, like, there's issues, and Friedman has brought up the issue of naming rights on an arena. You know, our team's going to have to refund the naming rights on their arena potentially if there aren't games there being played and if it's not getting mentioned on the broadcasts. Your local broadcast as well. You know, Sportsnet and whoever it is pays these teams X amount of money for the content, for their games to be played at a good time locally and all that stuff. I don't think you can suddenly go to your local TV deals and say, oh, hey, by the way, that game you pay us to broadcast, it's going to now be in Vegas and it's going to start at 11 a.m. local time because we need to play three games in one day at the rink. Like the bubbles, I just think bubbles aren't happening next year. It's going to be go to each individual city. You might play series there so that, you know, you don't have to travel as much and the schedule is a little bit easier to pull off. But I don't see a scenario where there's bubbles of any kind for the regular season.
So doing that, we're going to have like an NFL situation where you're going to be missing some guys, right?
I think so. I think there'll be situations where guys are going to have to be put on the COVID list and have to quarantine.
So are we not,
all that?
First of all, I would like to say we are leading the league right now because the best player in the world already had it. Therefore, he can't get it again. Mm-hmm. We got Connor the whole goddamn year.
You absolutely can get it again.
Yeah, I think
it, unfortunately, like as awful as that is,
strain of it is what I'm told to by medical.
Yeah,
people,
but it's still you're still dealing with it, and you can get the one that lasts for weeks instead of days, kind of thing. So
nothing lasts for a week in Connor's body. He gets a little biosteel in there, sits down, concentrates, and pushes it right on out.
Yeah, Formula 97 goes in, and it just evaporates right out.
Yeah.
I think Tyler kind of hit it on the head, and I think that another reason why it's not going to be the bubbles is because the PA doesn't want bubbles. The PA went through the playoffs with kind of an understanding of how things were going to go, and it didn't go that way. By all reports, both Edmonton and Toronto's bubbles were, you know, lackluster in their ability to entertain and give these players, hey, Rick, you can be upset about it all you want. The players didn't like it. Some players didn't like it. And you understand it from a standpoint of why should they have to go out of their way to suffer so that the league can prosper and the
team
can prosper.
They're also making millions of dollars.
Agreed, but they didn't
get a penny in the playoffs, right? You don't play for a penny. You don't get nothing.
Right.
Now you're playing for money. Now you're going to have to do this stuff if you want your paycheck.
That's absolutely my point, though, is that they did all that without getting paid a penny, and now they're in the position of, we don't have to play the season if we don't want to, so we're going to do it our way.
If Joe Blow doesn't want to play because he doesn't like the bubbles, that's fine. Stay home.
It's just not going to happen.
You know what?
Look
at your team. Sorry, guys. It's not a thing for me. But otherwise, if you get too much mixing around, you can screw up the whole damn league.
Just to be a devil's advocate, though, you could also be an owner and say, why would I pay these guys salaries if I'm not getting any ticket revenue?
Yeah, 100%.
But owners are probably going to, you'd have 29 other owners probably calling you really quickly. But
I just will say to Gary Brett, in the interview, Gary Bettman does say, admittedly, he would never ask the players to do a long-term bubble situation again because it was too difficult.
And that's fair. Like, if you look at the teams that made it to the end, yeah, they were in there a long time, though they did have some family allowed to sneak in at one point. Right?
Yeah,
just
exactly.
A little bit. Yeah, that's fair. Like, you know, they got a little taste of what they were looking for, though. So, yeah, I do think that the smaller bubbles, the shorter bubbles, I think is the best for the league in terms of give and take on both sides of things. And overall, protecting the league on its own because it spreads too fast. We know what that happened to that point. So
it's a marketing dream for the league because they can turn it into, you know, basically playoff marketing where you've got the Canadians and the Habs are playing each other and it, you know, these three games could mean the end of their season kind of thing. Like,
did you say the Canadians and the Habs?
I love
the Canadians and the Leafs. All the fans are
damn
off,
interest
so
squad
playing themselves.
Yeah,
but yeah, like, you know, the Leafs are playing the Canadians on Friday, Saturday, and Monday night. Like, and that's something for you to tune in. That would be perfect for them. Obviously, in Canada, maybe it's a little bit different down in the States. I would be interested to see what the breakdown of the divisions will be if they do a Canadian division. But I think that if you do the baseball style schedule, it's just fine. It'll be fun to watch and entertaining nonetheless.
So Pierre LeBrun's tweet, he says more on the governor's call, but the potential for a Canadian division and three U.S. divisions. Also the idea of teams playing 2-3 games in a row versus the same team to limit travel and exposure. All that makes sense. Sort of like a baseball style schedule. But again, nothing written in stone, just ideas right now. Personally,
games,
I love the
games. How many games do they think we're playing?
So I was looking at the Score actually did a couple of mock-ups of some different divisional kind of ideas. And it seems like everybody will play each other. It reminds me of the old Northwest Division days when everybody would play each other eight times.
That's 48 games.
To work the math out, you know, if they go 50, then maybe you play Calgary twice or another time after that or something like that. It doesn't really matter to me. I really like the idea of the 2-3 games in a row, though. I think that's really like part of the fun of the playoffs is watching teams build hatred as the series progresses. And I think that would be a lot of fun, especially if they're doing something like an all-Canadian division.
Yeah, that'll be the animosity level will be relatively high to begin, and it will only elevate with every three-game series, and then having to do that, you know, four times or three times or whatever the hell it is. It's going to get, by the end of the year, these guys are going to hate each other. And you're right, it's going to feel like playoffs in the fact that, you know, they just keep playing each other, keep playing each other, keep playing each other, and they're going to hate. It's going to be fantastic, but I'm telling you, this is going to hurt our insides watching.
Absolutely. It's the stress is going to be real.
I think like even just the perspective of the standings, right? Like you go into a situation where Edmonton is 4 points back of the Winnipeg Jets and they have 6 games to go and they're going to play the Flames 3 times and then the Jets 3 times. Like the pressure you're going to have going into these 3-game series is going to be crazy. The other thing it's going to do that's interesting is how, and Dan, I think you were the one who might have pointed this out on Twitter, how will teams handle their goaltending and their lineups and things like that? Like, that side of it's going to be interesting as well. There's going to be more strategy.
Well, and another element, too, is the luck element that we all see through the season. You know, Tampa Bay rolls through town and Steven Stamkos is out for 2 weeks. Oh, we dodged a bullet with Steven Stamkos being out. You know, we get into that situation and, God forbid, Leon Draisaitl goes on COVID.
No, pick another team.
Watch your language.
Line A's hurt.
Okay. Line A is out with a cold for the next 2 weeks, and the Oilers get a Line A or a Hellebuck, Winnipeg Jets team. All of a sudden, that fixes it for Edmonton. So there's going to be an element of luck that's just going to come into it, which is like, it's sick to think that you could be happy that Hellebuck contracted COVID.
But you're going into a 3-game series and you're like, dang, all right. It's same thing with injuries, right? Yeah. You never want to see players get hurt. But then when the Penguins roll into town and Crosby's out for 2 weeks, you're kind of like,
the mumps.
That timing worked out okay for us.
But that's a 2-point swing possibly, as opposed to a 7-point or 8-point swing if you're playing that team 4 times in a row. So there's an element of luck that's going to come in.
Wouldn't a 3-game series, so like when you play like Calgary, we call those 4-point games, right? Because if you're tied with them, you're either going to be up to or down to. So then a 3-game series could technically be a 12-point swing.
Oh, dude, can you imagine what the standings are going to look like?
It's going to be great. The pressure is...
You'd be last place a 1 day and give it 10 days later, you're in first.
Yeah.
The other thing is just going to be the pressure is going to be from game one. There's no like... You know how when you go through October, you're kind of like, the October record doesn't really mean anything. But now it will from game one, especially in a condensed season, especially if they're doing series where it's 2-3-4 games against the same team in a row. Like there's no time to just ease into it.
And there will be times, I would assume, and this is just from watching baseball and watching NFL happen, that you're going to see teams will have to take 2 weeks off or a week off of their schedule and the adjustments and the scrambling that they're going to have to do after that. And then your standings are going to be all thrown off. You know, the Flames have played 8 less games than another team.
Like, the NFL only did that. The NFL only had that happen once, right? Like one little, maybe between 2 weeks, it kind of worked out. It's kind of funky. Baseball had it for a short little while. Baseball looked really bad at the beginning.
Yeah, and baseball looked like it was going to shut down again. They were like days away from shutting down.
But this is where the players have to take it upon themselves to make sure when they're away, they're not taking any unnecessary chances that is going to affect everything.
I think so with the Canadian division, with the chance that you're playing 3-game series, we don't know how long the regular season is going to be. Like no one knows what next season is going to look like, but I think everyone is recognizing that it's going to be a ton of fun. And B, next season's just going to be absolutely chaotic.
It's going to be massive. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
It's going to be a ton of pressure.
And you look at the playoff this year, right? And we had a bunch of question marks around that. And that was crazy enough. This is going to be bonkers when it comes down to it. It'll have an asterisk next to it, but I don't think it'll be a negative asterisk. I think it'll
is just anybody
be
like
a, an exciting
is anybody
test.
Else angry though, like me, that the NBA is going to tip off before we drop the damn no. puck on game one?
Why does it fucking no, the Masters is yeah. on right now before we drop the puck? God damn
no,
it!
That doesn't count. That doesn't count.
I know what
but
you're
they,
saying.
They handed
Rick.
Out the Larry O'Brien after the NHL. They handed out the Lakers won after the Stanley Cup was handed out. Well, and they're going to get back into it before. We may not even start January 1st. That's still like a massive question mark.
But I mean, like at the same point, the WNBA started at the exact same time their whole season played out before the NBA finished their playoffs. So it's like, it's just, you know, it's kind of like, I understand where you are. And I was there, I think like a month ago where I was just kind of like, ah, it's just a miss. But it doesn't make me mad as much as it. I want them to just be able to do it right. And I think that, you know, the reality with COVID and everything is that everything just fluctuates.
But the only reason we're there is because nobody made a tough decision 6 weeks ago. They just kept pushing that tough. You're going to have to make the tough decision sooner or later. You might as well make it sooner and just get on with things because they do not want to run this into next. They do not want this to affect 21-22. And if you're playing into July next year, like they've said, there's a date in July where they don't want to hand the cup out later than that. I think we're missing out. They just missed out on a chance to get this thing going. Like I don't see the point of sitting around and wait. Like nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change.
But also they've so far only officially changed from December the 1st to January the 1st. So if they are able to get training camp started by January the 1st, then they're what, a week behind the NBA? I'm not that upset.
No, if the NBA wants. If we're talking about the NBA wants to tip off on December 22.
Yeah,
you said if you said January 1 for training camp, that's not that's like
fine.
January. That's like January 20th for game one. Then now we're.
I think they would do a compressed. All that stuff would be compressed.
Oh yeah, like, I'm talking like a week.
But if you're Detroit, if you're Ottawa, are you going to accept a compressed fucking training camp? Those guys haven't played in a goddamn year.
Also,
fuck. Yeah, but they're allowed to train now, right? They're allowed to practice and train now together.
In the small little things like we have out here, a couple of guys going. But I mean, Sam's out here. He ain't in Detroit skating around with, you know, whoever out there he's going to be playing with.
To cap this off, I'll just, Elliot Friedman did a hit on what he thinks he's heard or what he thinks this will look like based on what he's heard. And we'll wrap this up and I'll give everybody a last word on it after Friedman. He says, I think there are a couple of things here, and I do think the NHL is going to try for January 1st. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it. It might be too ambitious, but I think they're going to try and do it. I've had some people reach out and give me nuggets about what they're hearing, and one of those things is that they looked at what happened in baseball. Baseball's way was you start, you get going, and you adjust on the fly. You deal with what you have to deal with, and I think there's concern that if hockey starts too late and COVID interrupts the schedule, as we all assume it will at some point, the less time and runway you give yourself and the more risk your season is of not finishing. I think that the league and the players both understand that. I think the players are getting anxious and they want to play. There's one of the big issues that still needs to get sorted out, but I think they're going to want to start as early as possible because it gives you more runway to deal with speed bumps that may arise. It also allows them to plan their season with a couple of weeks at the back end where they can make up games if they need to, or if they don't need them, they can just start the playoffs and get going.
I'm adding those arguments. I'm throwing it in my little quiver here because I'm going to add that to my argument whenever I decide to debate anybody outside of this. Because I think that's a great. I think that's very smart. Like that's very true. If the longer we take, the less room there is for error. And if there is going to be a little hiccup there, you don't have a lot of time to play with.
You really don't.
You got to make hard decisions, man. Just make them. It's just rip that Band-Aid off. Don't pull it off slowly.
But that might not be the smart decision. Like, I think you need to be, you can't just sit there and go, well, it's whatever, November 13th. We better just decide today. What do you guys want to do? Let's do it. Let's go.
I didn't mean that. I don't want anything rushed.
So my internet is
glitching. It needed to be started way a long time ago, but you needed to like just make the tough decisions at that point. I don't want anything to get rushed. I don't want anything like that, but have your talks and move along and figure it out. I guarantee you, there's 60% of this is already, you know, jotted down and they've already got this discussed and figured out and they're just trying to put the rest of it together.
The reality is for like a team or a league like MLB, Bank Milk, we can't hear you now. You're good now.
Good.
But yep, the MLB, it was like it was very ham-fisted to start. I think they were a cold performer, both Tyler's and I, at one point. Because
they were at the very beginning of this whole COVID thing too, right? So they were almost the
canary in the coal mine, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but what it took was an outbreak in a couple of teams for them to be like, oh boy, this is for real. And but the different situation with what they did versus what hockey is talking about doing is that they had players staying in the stadiums at their home stadium. Like they were not going out into public and introducing there. And I don't think you're going to have that with the NHL players. I don't assume that they'll be staying at the Marriott when they're playing at home in Edmonton. They'll want to be home with their family.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, like the good news for me is that once we started getting news about return to play in the summer, everything just seemed to roll along very quickly. Mm-hmm. So now I'm just happy that the NHL and the players are actually talking about details. So to me, we're recording this, is November 13th, and let's just get this going. Let's get these people on the phone every day, all day.
Hey, Jen, so in July, all the Yankees were staying in the city, like with the games that were in New York, they were all like living in a hotel or something?
I wanted to do more research on it, but yes, I saw like the Boston Red Sox had like their suites were made into bedrooms or hotel rooms for two players at each.
They stayed inside.
That's the way I understand it, is that they were, and maybe that was just for training camp, but I thought that was the case for all of the teams.
I think we would have heard a lot. I think we heard a lot. Would have heard a lot.
If you know anything about players sleeping at Fenway Park, hit us up on our socials. ON Radio Podcast on Twitter.
All right, I'm going to get it. You guys go to the next segment.
You can get inside the Green Monster, man. You put your hand out. Like, I want my room in the Green Monster.
Well, we already know there's a bathroom in there because Manny made that famous. So,
like the theme Manny rooms, being Manny. Theme rooms at West Edmonton Mall. Players are sleeping on fire trucks.
All right, we're doing a little bit of a different kind of pop. Did I freeze again? Am I glitching?
Slightly, but not that bad.
All right. All, so we're
I just found a video. I just found a video of Michael Chavez,
yeah,
who was showing off one of the suites.
But
as,
it was just
as it was a locker room for him and Verdugo.
Yeah, when, they were.
Was like a video. Locker room, or were they staying at Fenway Park?
They weren't staying there.
I don't know.
I like the idea of all these dudes having sleepovers at Fenway.
I assumed that's what that was. I've misunderstood, I guess.
He really dropped the ball not going to Toronto then. At least they have a hotel attached there.
Yeah, no kidding. Unbelievable. feel free to shame Dan on social media. He likes it. we're going to do a little bit of a different layout for today's podcast. We've got a very special guest, Kelsey Mitchell, coming up at the end of the podcast. We do an interview with her to talk about the 2021 Olympics. Tyler and Dan, we were all part of it. The meteoric rise for Kelsey as she went from not owning a bike to being a world record holder to now representing Canada at the 2021 Olympics, provided that they continue, is pretty amazing.
And this
huge
interview,
shout out to Cornerstone, yes, for Cornerstone to have brought her together with us. Yeah. Because you're right, Bag Milk, that was an interesting story. It's like it's one of those listens that you're gonna be like, who's Kelsey Mitchell? But by the end of it, you're gonna be like, oh, I'm Googling more of this girl because I need to know this story.
So you're saying you can become an Olympian in only 2 years of practicing?
Athleticism and genes of Kelsey Mitchell, then yeah.
Oh, there's that prerequisite. Okay, my bad.
Because just to give you a teaser, Rick, she went to, Tyler, what was it called again? The RBC
Training Ground.
Which is basically like, from my understanding, was basically she showed up to see if she was going to be good at any of these sports, and she was very good is the answer.
Well, I know I rode bikes there with Kuhn and Jay Downton last year for a little mini triathlon thing. And I think it was a 10K. Yeah, I think it was four times around Horlock Park. And it was absolutely horrible. So good for her because it's an excruciating sport.
You only did 2K. I'm just going to say it right now.
No,
one loop around, remember?
No, we ran, but we rode our bike four times.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I thought you were talking about the running.
No. By the way, the running was more of a walk for me. Like, once I got around that first corner.
No, you did good. You did good. I mean, nobody can keep up with Coom, who runs marathons for jokes.
I had Jay behind me for first a little bit there, and then he decided to turn it on a bit. So, that was a long day, boys. That was tough.
Well, the thing about participating with Jay with anything is he gets incredibly competitive very quickly. So, maybe we should line up a bike race between him and he and Kelsey Mitchell, which he would get absolutely dominated in.
Well, he's training on his Peloton now, so maybe he's got a little bit of an opportunity here.
Maybe. Maybe we'll have to organize that. We'll have to check in with Kelsey afterwards to see if she'd be down to show Jay Downson a little bit of humility on a bicycle, despite his thriving on the Peloton, as you would learn on the Real Life Podcast, recorded Monday and Thursday. Tyler, it is time to get your buttons ready. We are going to do the Codago Tequila Hot and Cold Performers of the Week. I love tequila more than anything on earth.
Tea time.
And the fact that tea time waits for no man, my friends. And the fact that Codago is here to help us out with the podcast is incredible. Their tequila is delicious. If you have a chance, the Rosa, it is not a shooting tequila, Tyler.
Okay. Sipping.
This is a sipping, maybe put it on ice.
That's Whoa, it. Hold on. Hold. That's like a suggestion, by the way.
That is a suggestion, yeah.
Okay, like you, if you you know you get a little antsy, just fire it back. I always suggest just throw the first one back. You can sip on the second one. Get that first one down you, though.
Although Rick did teach me one of the greatest tequila hacks of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Which was to take a little chaser of Clamato juice, which just kills it.
Huh.
And it was amazing. I didn't believe him at first, and it does. It works fantastically.
So, yeah, no, it absolutely kills it. You can also do try an orange slice with a little bit of cinnamon on it, if you like.
Oh, that's nice. That's healthy. Basically healthy. Right. So go to Codago1530.com. They've got a store locator located right there on the website, right at the top of the page. Get yourself some tequila, because tea time waits for no man. That's not their slogan, but I'm making it up. Ooh, they got cocktail recipes on here, too. I love me a cocktail, Tyler. Mm-hmm. I love me a cocktail. All right, boys, as we do every week, we start off with our veggies, with our cold performers of the week, and I'm looking at Nation Dan, because he is at the top of my screen right now. Mr. Nation Dan, your Codago cold performer of the week.
It's going to go out to the year 2020, but specifically more just the loss of Alex Trebek this week.
Yep,
for a guy that, you know, for a lot of people, we grew up with him at our dinner table kind of thing. Listening to, you know, I have all kinds of useless trivia facts that would serve me well on Jeopardy, but not much elsewhere. But hearing the stories coming out this week again, you know, from another person that we lose, it's tough to watch. But yeah, 2020, my cold performer of the week.
Tyler, you are up next on my screen. Your Codago cold performer of the week.
And you didn't include a bad music bite.
No, I did not have a bad music, but I should have gotten the Jeopardy sound. That would have been a good way to pay tribute to Alex Trebek, but my bad. My cold performer of the week, I'm a big golf fan. I like watching golf. I'm fired up about the Masters, but there's one golfer I don't like, and his name is Bryson DeChambeau. And this guy talked all this stuff about how he, Augusta for him, that's a par 67. And everyone's like, oh, Bryson DeChambeau might tear apart Augusta. What's going to happen if he ruins Augusta? Bryson DeChambeau, at the time of us recording this, is 3 over par on the day, 1 over on the tournament, and he might miss the cut. Bryson DeChambeau, it brings me great joy to name you my cold performer of the week, because Bryson DeChambeau...
You stink!
So what is it specifically about him that's bothering you right now? Is it the arrogance of thinking that he could just do what he wishes with Augusta?
Yeah, and I don't like his hat.
I respect that. If a guy's got a shitty hat, that's no good. Rick, your Codago cold performer of the week.
Well, I'm going to stick away from the year 2020 stuff because that hurts enough. So I'm going to go with something with the Oilers here and say this no Nuge contract. I don't like it. Let's just get it done. Let's get it sealed, taken care of, and get it out of the way. Let's just get it done. I don't like it sitting out there like this. Mm-hmm. Let's get it signed, please.
What the hell is going on?
I agree. Keep Nuge forever. Everybody knows it. I would also add, I have no concerns about it, but I would also add, let's get Ethan Bears done as well.
Yeah.
My cold performer of the week for Codago this week is going to be just the hilarious approach I think that the NHL is taking with their reverse retro jersey reveal. I had that on the list of topics for us, but we spoke a little bit longer about hubs than I thought we would. But I just find it funny where they're doing the thing that brands do all the time when they're a little bit too cute, where they're just showing a little snippet and it's coming up and they're like, 10 o'clock, we're gonna rub your jeans in the loin area a little bit and show you what these new jerseys are going to look at. And it bothers me. I just want to see the full jersey. I want to see what my Nuge reverse retro jersey will look like once he gets his extension. Just give us the whole jersey, NHL. Cold performer of the week.
That's a joke. That's an absolute joke is what it is.
Thank you. It is a joke. I agree. Flipping the ledger, we are looking at the bright sides from our past 7 days in our lives. Again, reverse order here. Rick is at the bottom of my screen. I'm starting with you. Your Kodigo hot performer of the week.
Well, this one just changed, actually, in like the last 5 minutes when we were talking about your interview there and what she does. Brought something up from this weekend. And the gentleman's name is Chris Nietzsche, I believe. And he is a young man with Down syndrome who completed an Ironman race.
I saw that.
So incredible. I brought up how we did the triathlon. It was a mini triathlon, like a really, really, really mini triathlon.
Yeah.
And it was horrendous. Okay. It sucked. And this young man with Down syndrome, that's not enough to hold him back. But now he takes on a Ironman race and completes it. And I don't care how long it took. I think it took him like 16 hours and 46 minutes and 9 seconds. Dude, that would take me 16 days.
Unbelievable.
So, Chris, well done. That is incredible.
So, just if you don't know.
There it is.
Just if you don't know, an Ironman, just according to Google, is a 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bicycle ride, and a 26.22-mile run. That is shocking.
Okay, so I take 21 days it would take for me, okay? 16 is a little bit, I was getting a little ahead of myself here. Let's call it 21. It's going to take me 3 weeks to get this done.
That would take me a calendar year. Tyler, you're up next. Your Kodigo Hot Performer of the Week.
Yeah, so my Hot Performer of the Week is going to be some welcome good news and great news, historic news from the world of baseball. The hiring of the Miami Marlins GM is not something we really expected to be groundbreaking news, but it was. They hired Kim Ng to be their next GM. She is now not only the highest-ranking female executive in baseball, out of the four major North American sports, she's the first female GM in any of them. And to anyone who wants to sit there and go, this is just, you know, a quote-unquote token hiring is what some people were saying, or this was done
ridiculous
just to look good, go read this girl's resume, man, because she might be the most overqualified first-time GM in sports history. 3 World Series rings, 8 postseason appearances as an executive. She was an assistant GM with the Yankees, assistant GM with the Dodgers, and spent a decade working with the commissioner. Kim Ng, you finally got your GM job. You are my hot performer of the week.
Cash money.
Pretty awesome. It's a pretty awesome story. Like, I didn't know too much about her before I saw the announcement this morning. And then, like you said, Tyler, you read the resume.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible. Mr. Nation Dan, your Kodigo hot performer of the week.
Echoing what Tyler said about Kim Ng and that movement, I'm also going to make another one. I don't usually go political, but the nomination of the vice president-elect of Kamala Harris this week, the 91st vice president, not 91st, geez, math. Anyways, the first person of color elected as a vice president, the first female elected as a vice president. Just amazing to see, the shift in our lives, in our lifetime, that has put some people that, you know, are pretty fantastic into important roles in this world. And so, yeah, my hot performer of the week is Kamala Harris.
Put some respect on my name.
I'm really embarrassed about what I'm going to say next. You guys have all had excellent hot performers of the week, and mine is so embarrassing. I wrote down, I'm going to flip my camera around and I'm going to show you guys what I wrote down for my hot performer of the week.
Screenshot this. We need this.
It is
our,
shockingly bad compared to what you guys were just saying. I wrote me for showering 3 days in a row. So that is the hot performer of the week by Kodigo. I'm giving that to me because I've showered now 3 days in a row for the first time probably since COVID struck. So that is embarrassing. And I wish I went first on that one.
I like that.
Because you guys had so much better answers than I did. And that's upsetting for me. And I understand now why we got a 1-star review for boring and annoying. So,
hey, that was not ripped off the internet, though. That was straight up from you. That was from your soul. That one, you own that one. That's fine.
Yeah, the fact that I wrote it down makes it so much worse.
You typed that.
Yep. Yep, I did. So thanks, Codigo. Thanks for jumping aboard. I appreciate you, and I love your tequila, and thank you very much for being a sponsor of the podcast. We love you. Tyler, yep. What do we got next to close out this podcast?
We got an interview with Kelsey Mitchell, so that'll be coming up just after this.
You're listening to Oilers Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
Very excited to be joined by a very special guest this week on the podcast, Kelsey Mitchell. She is a Canadian Olympic cyclist. And before we bring in Kelsey, just want to let you know that this is brought to you by Cornerstone Insurance Brokers. Check them out online, cornerstoneins.ca. Solid protection, sound advice. That's our friends at Cornerstone Insurance. We're now joined on Oilers Nation Radio by Kelsey Mitchell. Kelsey, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I am great. And for those listening, this is our second attempt at the interview because I forgot to unmute everyone's mics. obviously, middle of the pandemic, it's been tough for everyone. But for you as an athlete, like that must be like, what's it been like waiting on the Tokyo Games? No one knew what was happening there. They've been pushed. Like, what's the last 6 months been like for you training wise?
Just training. Yeah, we were supposed to do the Olympics back in July and that was postponed. And so just have been training away, not really any racing going on. But yeah, really fine tuning, everything on the bike, in the gym, just getting stronger and better all around as an athlete. So it's been a blessing in disguise, I'd say, just having this extra year to train.
How's it affected the routine just in general, like what you're working on as opposed to, like you said, there's no races to kind of get some tune-ups in?
Yeah, my 2019 year was pretty crazy with racing. And so just had this year to train and not have to stress about racing and catching or like getting those points to qualify for the Olympics. So now we know we're locked in. We're going to the Olympics. Hopefully they happen in 2021. And just focusing on all the things I kind of missed because I just joined the sport a little bit late. So just playing catch up.
Well, so has that been an advantage for you, do you think? Like I'm sure for some athletes, it's, you know, they go through the 4 year cycle of, there's a nice little pun there, but they go through the four year cycle of planning and preparing, ramping it up to get to the peak of performance at the Olympics. You know, for you, you know, it sounds like you've taken that as a positive to kind of have another year to just be able to get to that absolute top level.
Yeah, for sure. I started full-time in cycling early 2018 is when I fully committed. And so my goal was to qualify for the Olympics. And it was just go, 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 catch up to these girls, like learn this new sport and try and figure out how to get the points and qualify for the Olympics. And it was just, yeah, only 2 years. And so I was able to take a breath and a step back and just see, like, appreciate how far I've come over the 2 years. And now, you know, my goal was to go to the Olympics. And now the goal is to podium at the Olympics. So it's just sets the bar even higher, I guess.
The story is absolutely fascinating. Like you mentioned, you didn't start until 2018. How did that process work? How did you get into this sport and then get to such a high level so quickly and so late in your athletic career?
Yeah, I was an athlete my entire life, played variety of sports. Soccer was my main one, but just I loved being active, doing anything, pushing my body. And so played university soccer at U of A and at Nate in Edmonton. That was done. Yeah, that was done and just was kind of lost, didn't know what to do after sports. And then found out about RBC Training Grounds, which is an Olympic combine, basically, where they test an athlete's speed, power, endurance, and strength. And then national sport organizations can reach out and do additional testing on you. And the first event that I did was a vertical jump. And right after that, a Cycling Canada representative came and said, you have really good leg power. Let's get you on a bike. And then they just kind of pursued me. And yeah.
Have you taken time? Do you even have time to appreciate the fact that 2 years ago, if my math is correct, 2 years ago, you went to this to the RBC event and now you're going to be going to the Olympics? Like, have you taken time to appreciate that? Or is that something down the line that you'll think about later?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate everything that has come. Like, it's such a blessing. This is exactly what I wanted in life. I wanted to be an athlete and I get to, like, that's my job essentially. And I didn't think it was possible. Once I finished university soccer, I thought I'd have to, you know, get a 9-to-5 job. And so this is exactly what I wanted. And every day if the training's hard, I just remind myself, like, what else would I rather be doing? You know, like, I did driving a truck for 8 hours a day. I did the 12-hour night shift. I've done all that stuff. So anytime that I'm on the track and I feel like puking after an effort, I'm like, okay, well, where else would I rather be?
The RBC training ground thing, that I want to talk about that more, because for someone who's never heard about that until now, so you showed up at this thing. Did you have like a general idea, like, oh, I'd like to get into cycling, or like, I hope I do this, or I hope I'm picked up by this kind of crew? Like, what was your mindset going into that?
So I finished university in 2016, and then I went traveling for 3 months. I had a job lined up when I came back, but I ended up getting sick and stuck in the hospital with, it's called dengue fever from a mosquito. Anyways, blessing in disguise, missed my interview for the job that I had set up when I came back. So then I was just kind of lost, not sure what to do. Had heard about this RBC training grounds where you can go and just test your athletic ability, I guess, against national sports standards. And all the tests were done in Alberta, but something inside of me was like, you got to do it. And so I had like no money after traveling, and I was just like, I got to go. So the last tryout was in Toronto. And so I booked a flight, flew to Toronto, and did the testing. And then I had to fly back again for the final testing. But obviously it was all worth it. And yeah, I didn't know much about it. I just knew that, a bunch of sport organizations were interested in it, and initially I was looking at like bobsled or rowing, but I wasn't a cyclist, so I didn't think cycling, but it all worked out.
Which makes it even more wild that now you've got a world record under your belt as well.
That one's pretty cool. to say, for sure.
Did you surprise yourself kind of at how quickly you picked it up and were able to get to such a high level in this sport?
It's funny because I wouldn't ever say that I was a super skilled soccer player or a really talented basketball player, but I was an athlete and I could run fast and I worked hard, and that's exactly what I did on the bike. Like, I was not good on the bike. Like, I was just like, you're supposed to be super aero and tucked in, but my arms are completely straight. I'm like all over the place and just, but I was going fast. Like, the power I was putting into the pedals was good. And so they're like, hey, she has potential. And then just fine tuning everything has worked out.
Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I was reading as we were prepping for this a little bit today, I read that the last time you kind of owned a bike was you were around 12 or something like that before this happened.
Yeah, I hadn't owned a bike or really ridden a bike since then, except for maybe stationary, just because I couldn't run from like a rolled ankle from soccer or something.
That's interesting wild stuff. For those who might be listening and don't know a lot about this sport, what would be like the main differences between a bike that you are going to ride in an event and like your average street bike that you're going to see someone on? Like, what are some of the intricacies when you're picking up, learning to ride this bike that are going to be different from just going to Canadian Tire and buying a bike?
Yes, you can do cool wheelies on both.
Yeah, for sure. The bike that I ride is a fixed gear. So that means as long as the bike is moving, the pedals are moving. It's one gear, so whatever gear you put on that bike, you're stuck with. So if you put on a really big gear, it'll take a while to get going. But if you put on a small gear, you'll get it going, but be completely spun out, essentially. These bikes also do not have any brakes. So the way you slow down is just with air resistance, and then you can backpedal a bit as you're going around. Those are the main differences between like a regular bike you buy a Canadian Tire versus these ones. And then, yeah, these are meant for the velodrome, which is the one here. I'm in Milton, Ontario, and it's like regulation size is 250 meters with a banking of about 43 degrees in the corners.
Wow. Was it kind of scary the first time you ripped around on one of those?
Yeah, it was scary, but it was so uncomfortable. I was like not scared. I was just focused on how uncomfortable it was sitting on the bike seat. Like, I had no padded shorts that we wear now, but it was, and I just was not used to it. And I was riding it for the first time with these like three other guys who also did the RBC training ground, and they seemed fine, and I was just having a really hard time with that.
As we mentioned, it's still early in your career, but it's been a successful run so far. We have I was reading off your accomplishments on your olympic.ca bio. It seems like you've done a lot already, and you have. What's sort of the next goals for you? Like, where obviously an Olympic gold is the big one. Is there anything else in your career you still want to accomplish?
There's lots I want to accomplish still. 2019 was a crazy year. It was just like Pan Am Games, Pan Am Champs, then a World Cup season, then Worlds. Everything was just getting bigger and bigger every race that I did. And so like the next big thing is obviously the Olympics, but I guess just it's an individual sport. And so I really have to focus on myself as an athlete. And I know I have so much more to give, and it's just exciting to see how far I'll be able to go with the sport. Like, I want to break my own record, or I want to go and like defend my title at Pan Am Games in the next few years, or and then hopefully go to the Olympics and get on the podium and then defend that medal, you know. So it's just, I just want to see how far I can go with the sport, and I definitely don't think I'm at my max.
An individual sport, and you mentioned you played soccer throughout university, college. How much different is the pressure heading into a big event when you're on the bike and it's just you, and it's, you know, you directly impact your own result versus the pressure you might have felt, you know, in a soccer game where you're going in there with a whole group kind of behind you? Like, what's that pressure? How different is that pressure?
That took a long time for me to adjust. I always was team sports. I wasn't a fan of individual sports. I liked having the shared pressure with 10 other people on the field. If you mess up, someone's got your back. And so, yeah, going on the track, you have your teammates and coaches in the pit, but they're not on the track with you. It's you against your opponent. It's your best day against their best day. It's the work that you put in versus the work they put in. And it's just, now I'm like, this is so sick. Like, I love it. It's such an adrenaline rush. And like, I get to see if all the work has paid off, and like, it's completely on me. But yeah, you're taking on all that additional pressure. Like, it's just on you. So, yeah.
And I'm curious about too, with the sport, like you say, it is a very individual sport. When it comes to your bike, is that your sole responsibility, or is there a team of, you know, engineers and people that are really trying to fine tune it with you to try and make sure it's exactly what you need?
Yeah, there's a bunch that like of little details, like the bike fit, the width of the handlebars, how high the seat is, what gear goes on, is usually a discussion between like me and my coach. But then we have mechanics that will worry about all that, because it's very tricky to figure out like the right tension of the chain. And like, if you're worrying about that on race day, it's just too much.
You talked a little bit earlier about just being a hard worker, and that's what you like to do. Do you have some inspiration for where that came from, or is that just kind of an internal fire that kind of has always been burning?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up actually in Fort McMurray, Alberta. I lived there for 10 years, and there wasn't a lot. There are sports up there, but there wasn't a lot of depth, so I'd be either playing up in sports for soccer or playing against the guys, and so they were always a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, and so I was always trying to prove myself. And yeah, like I said, I was never the one dribbling around all the different players, but like, I was on defense, like getting back, working my ass off just to make up for my lack of skill in the sport. And so, yeah, I grew up just working really hard and just trying to give my best. Yeah.
Kelsey, we really appreciate you giving us some time. Your story is obviously an incredible one. We look forward to keeping track and hopefully watching you bring home a gold at the Tokyo Games.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Last question I have before we let you go, Kelsey. Yeah. Just, it's been 9 days now since you went stocked up on November 1st, discounted Halloween candy, which is really speaks to me on a core level. How much of that you got left?
I think like a third of each bag and box. Yeah.
Now,
we've been going through it. I've been sharing, though.
Okay. I was just going to say, the coach could be listening right now. We don't know. We don't want to get her in too much trouble.
This was great, Kelsey. Thanks for your time.
Yes, thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Follow Oilers Nation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
That will do it for episode 112 of Oilers Nation Radio. I'm Bag Milk. I'm here with Rick, Nation Dan, and Tyler Yaremchuk. Thank you all for being here. As I do every week, I'm going to ask you to leave a review on the podcast for us. I will read them, even if they're bad, as I did today. And I also want to ask you to follow us on both Twitter and Instagram at Owen Radio Podcast. Tell your friends about Oilers Nation Radio. Every Friday, we got a new episode. And I want to thank Sherwood Ford the Giant, SkipTheDishes.ca, Cornerstone Insurance, and Kodago Tequila for making it all possible. I appreciate all of you, and I appreciate you for listening.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Shout out, Damian.
Best wishes.
Thanks for listening to Oilers Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media to stay up to date and never miss a podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.